Well, welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I'm excited today to be with special guest John Laurito. John has a passion for leadership and teaching top-level leaders. He is a podcaster, speaker, and author. John, I'm going to, in a moment, give you an opportunity to go a little bit deeper into your background, but I just wanted to say thank you for joining us today. I'm looking forward to our time together and getting your insights on how leadership creates culture. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks. So you are quite an accomplished leader in your own right over the last two decades in the financial services industry. Maybe you can share with our listeners a little bit more about your background. And really, I'd be interested myself, and I'm sure others would be, John, in hearing how you made the transition from leading some of the largest financial organizations in the financial advisory business to being an author, podcaster, and speaker.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. As you had mentioned, I started and spent most of my career in financial services. I started as a financial advisor with Ameriprise back 22 years old, right out of school. I looked like I was 15 or 16 at that point. So our business, it was a little tough to convince people to trust me with their finances, but I loved it. I mean, as you know, it's a challenging but extremely rewarding business. And very quickly into my career, I realized, and I always have, even since days in high school, I've had a passion, almost an obsession around leadership and the whole concept of helping people do things that they never would have been able to do otherwise, and influencing organizations and change. And so I got into formal leadership positions. My first role was running an office in Hartford, Connecticut, which was a kind of the classic turnaround type of job. It was an office that was ranked almost dead last, 100 out of 110 offices. And I think they felt like, okay, well, he can't screw it up any more than it already is. So we'll give it a shot. And that's where I really cut my teeth on leadership. I certainly made some mistakes, but also some great decisions, namely in hiring some fantastic leaders and built a great team that helped turn that organization around. And we ended up being one in the country after 5 years. So fast forward, I ended up doing that type of thing three more times at other spots in the country, in Boston and DC, Maryland, Virginia area, and then back up in Boston. And I probably a few years ago, I started to really get interested in leadership in a broader sense, not just leading the organization that I was running, but also to help other leaders become great leaders and take some of the learnings that I've been fortunate to get and spread those to other leaders in other industries and all over the place. So I started doing some speaking engagements at different conferences. Those led to different types of coaching and consulting type of work. And I realized, wow, you know what? This is really what I want to be doing. So it took a little bit of planning. And then in February of 2020, I launched my business as a leadership consultant 3 weeks before COVID hit. And I know what happened.
If COVID taught us anything, John, it's the need for good leadership. So a challenging time to get started, but a good time from a topic perspective.
Oh, yeah. It gave me a lot to talk about. And it was interesting. I mean, you've been in situations where you've had to pivot really quickly. And that was absolutely one of them. I learned a lot about self-leadership as well during that. And it turned out to be a great thing. Sometimes what you think is the path, the course, the direction for you, sometimes if you just pay attention to the signs that are out there, you realize, wow, you know what? There's a whole different, even better, more fulfilling opportunity if I do something a little bit different. And so I did. I changed directions a little bit of how I was building my business, but I'm fortunate to get the opportunity to work with companies and leaders all around the world, actually. And as you know, do podcasting and coaching and speaking engagements. So it's a lot of fun, keeps me busy and hopefully impacting a lot of people.
Well, that's great. And that's why, again, I was excited to have you as a guest on Winning Through Culture, because as we've talked about in the past, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about today, obviously leadership is a really important component in the formation of a healthy culture. And quite frankly, I guess in any culture, even if it's unhealthy, leadership's going to have an influence on that as well. And so we'll dive into that. I know from listening to your podcast and to your talks, you do touch on an important topic of self-leadership, you know, really getting a sense of who one is as a person before they try and go out and lead others. So we'll touch on that as well, because I think that's often overlooked. Everybody thinks of leadership more positionally than as a way of being. So maybe starting out, John, what role have you seen leadership play in the formation, and we'll stay with a healthy culture for now,
That's a great question. I think some people are under the false understanding that culture happens once you get results and then you start getting, you know, a sports team starts winning and then all of a sudden they get this great culture. It's not the case. It's actually the reverse. You've got to build that culture first, which is very tough. I mean, if you think about it, you've got to build a winning culture before you're winning. You've got to almost do it backwards. But that's really critical to the success of an organization. And a leader's role in that is absolutely essential. A leader is the one who defines what that culture is going to be. It's very deliberate. I know you're very well aware of this because you've done this and done it for many years. But the leader's role is to define, what does this look like? I mean, when we are, if we are going to get to where we're trying to get to, what does the culture need to look like and feel like? And how does it need to support us getting to where we're trying to go to? And then it's the difficult part of it is course correcting. It's not just enough for the leader to have in his or her mind an idea of how people are working together and what it feels like to go into an organization and what the core values of that organization are and how we uphold those. But it's really paying attention to the signs that we're either moving in the right direction or we're not. Because cultures change. They may be good right now or great, but I've seen sometimes the slow degradation of a culture when a leader is not really paying attention, or even if they are noticing changes, but they're not doing anything about it. So it's an ongoing role, but it's a critical role to the success of an organization.
Yeah, and it's, I think the piece that you hit on is something that I learned early in my leadership the hard way, and it took a while, which is I figured once we started winning, then we'd have a culture. Not realizing it was the culture that we had that was holding us back from winning. So I really like the way you drew out the reality that you've got to focus on the culture you want to have, even if you don't have it, and start moving in that direction.
And it, which is tough, and you bring up a great point, because it's the hard part about it. And I equate it to when, if you've ever bought a house and built a house on a new development that's not even built, and there's no homes there. And you're going into a trailer where the salesperson is there and they've got diagrams of what this is going to look like. But it's really hard because they've got to sell this vision that doesn't even exist. But what's interesting is once that development starts to get built and there's actually more homes and there's trees and the coffee shop on the corner and all the things that they promised, their little park and everything like that and the pool, it becomes easier and easier to sell homes. The culture builds on itself. And that's what's key about an organization. For those leaders who may be frustrated with that, well, it's taking one step at a time. It's creating that. But once you start to get the buy-in for it, it starts to build and it's this self-perpetuating, almost flywheel effect. It's a really cool thing.
I think that really leads me to my next question, John, which is in your coaching, consulting, working with leaders, organizations, I mean, what are the attributes that you see? Are there themes, anything consistent in leaders that are building a purposeful culture?
I think a leader has to be really, one is authentic. And you, that's, I know, one of your core values of your organization. It's amazing at how many leaders try to be somebody that they're not. They try to get an image of what a successful leader is, and then they try to be that when it's really not them.
Maybe
it's changing their personality. Exactly. I think number one is you have to really be true to yourself. You have to know who you are because people are smart. They figure out if you're one person in the office or in work and you're another person outside, they start to see little chinks in the armor and ultimately, okay, this is not who this person is really trying to present themselves as. So one is authenticity, and it's got to be combined with this relentless, dogged, unwavering pursuit of the vision to the point where you have a clear vision that you can paint in a really compelling, motivating way, because the best leaders are ones that can get people believing in something that doesn't really exist, at least at this point. And when they get people energized around that in a way where people know how they are connected to that vision. In other words, what does my role mean to this whole thing? And if I do my role really well, how will that help us get to that vision or get to it faster? And then what's in it for me? When we do get to that vision, because I see leaders fall short of this, is how does that affect me in my life and my well-being and how I feel and think and what am I doing? And I think the best leaders are excellent at that. They communicate the vision extremely well. They do it frequently and they don't stop, even in light of some dips in their progress.
Yeah. The vision piece is, again, starts aspirationally. Usually you don't start where you wanted to be. Start, I love your analogy of the neighborhood, because I did that once. So I can relate to it. Start buying a house off of a piece of paper in a neighborhood that all I had was the prospect of what it would look like. So, and it turned out well. So attributes, the flip side is, in your role of coach and consultant, you probably get brought into some situations that are not going so well, John, whether it's a toxic environment or an unhealthy culture. What are some of the attributes you see on the other side, you know, that people are showing up as or with that are kind of contributing to an unhealthy culture?
I see leaders make a few fundamental mistakes, and they're unintentional, as most mistakes are. And most of the leaders that are making mistakes are unaware that they're making these mistakes. So that's the tough part about it, is shedding light on something that, and bringing awareness to something that somebody's unconsciously incompetent with regard to. One tends to be the type of leader that is wanting to be the go-to for everything. They're the ones that they feel the need to be the smartest one in the room. They feel the need to be the one that everybody needs for everything. And what it is an ego thing. They just feel like, okay, that feeds their ego when, hey, we've got this really important decision to make, or this important meeting, or this important strategic move, and we need that leader. And if they don't call on me as the leader for that, then I feel like I'm irrelevant. Not the case, because that's a sign of a leader that ultimately that organization gets bottlenecked, because everybody's got to go through that leader for everything. And you can only move as fast as that leader's capacity allows. The best leaders are great at empowering other people. They're great at building other leaders and then giving up control. So that other piece of that, that is the mark of a bad leader, is the one that always has to have control over everything. You're limiting your capacity and your growth potential for sure. There's a lot of things that leaders can do that ultimately break trust. And trust, as you know, in an organization is absolutely essential. You have to have high levels of trust. If you don't, you've got the ramifications of everything from retention problems to lower productivity and performance to toxic environments. You've got, you know, backstabbing, you've got lack of communication, you've got all kinds of stuff, people working in silos. All of these are disruptive to an organization. A leader, him or herself, can break trust when ultimately a few things happen. One is they're not doing what they say they're going to do. They make promises that they can't fulfill. Again, sometimes it's still totally unintentional. So you've got to have good systems and follow up and be able to execute on the things you say you will. It could be just simply they're not showing that they care. When we don't, as humans, like to surround ourselves with people that really have no interest in my well-being. You know, I was working with somebody not that long ago that I had hired for something, and I could tell that this person just really didn't care whether I had success or not, even though I was hiring them to help me have success. And that wasn't a long-term relationship. It turned out to be a very short-term one, because I didn't trust this individual that they were truly in it for my benefit. So I think leaders unknowingly sometimes send those signals, and there's a lot of other things, but those are some of the things that I think are really key that leaders do sometimes unknowingly.
Well, as I listen to you, John, there's a common theme I hear, and maybe we can touch on that, because I think you had to work through this with a number of leaders from a coaching perspective, and that is something you even alluded to, which is the importance of self-awareness. How do you see a kind of healthy sense of self-awareness factoring into, again, the attributes of a more successful leader? And how do you help someone get there?
That's such a great question. And the answer is so critical, because it will open major doors of growth for a leader. Self-awareness, in my mind, is one of the most critical things. And if you look at the top leaders in the world, mm-hmm. let alone in our industry, you will see people that are very self-aware. First of all, the reason why it is important is because it allows you to build the right team around you. If you're not self-aware, you feel like you're great in everything. You don't necessarily know where your boundaries are, and you don't really know where your sweet spot is. And you also are not aware of how you're impacting other people negatively or positively, or when you are. So you really don't have the ability to spend the time doing the things that are really going to help you and help other people, because you just don't have the awareness. And how you get it is, I always start working with somebody on building self-awareness with understanding what you are thinking and how you are feeling in different situations. because what I find is that many people make decisions and take actions that do not line up or totally contradict the goals that they're trying to accomplish. They're trying to build trust, or they feel like trust is important. They acknowledge that, but their thoughts that they have that are generated because of emotions they have from some kind of stimulus causes them to do something that breaks trust, doesn't even build it. So the self-awareness is being able to catch yourself and saying, hey, you know what? I'm really frustrated. I'm upset. I'm angry, or I'm disappointed in this. And it's causing me now to have these thoughts that, hey, Tim doesn't like me or doesn't respect my time or this and that. And it's now going to cause me to take this action. And that action might now exacerbate that problem. So it's really understanding, okay, what's going on up here? And then what am I about to do or take action on? That's, I think, the first step for building self-awareness. And there's other things beyond that, but I think it starts with understanding yourself.
Yes, we could probably do a significant podcast on that topic alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big one. You've said that the ability to lead is the single most important factor to an organization's success. And you've certainly lived that in your own success as a leader. But can you elaborate, John, on how this plays into, as you mentioned earlier, building the right team and in today's day and age, keeping the right team?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've seen a lot of different companies where they've got great products or services, yet they failed. And it was because of not having the right leadership, and vice versa. You've seen some with even mediocre products and services that have succeeded in a great way. I think this comes back also to the prior question around self-awareness. The leaders that really are top leaders are ones that build a team of people that are great at the things that they're not. You look at somebody like Richard Branson, you know, he was severely dyslexic, and that forced him to hire people around him that could handle all the kind of the smaller or more detailed work. And he was focused on what he knew he could do really well, which was focus on vision and where are we going and creative thinking. And that's really what's led to a lot of success with him over the years. And a lot of leaders are like that. I think the key thing is understanding if you were going to do one thing all day long, which is ultimately your unique ability, the one thing that makes the most impact that also makes you happiest, what would that be? And then if you think about that and say, okay, if I do that, and that's really what I'm great at, how do I build the team around me that can do everything else to allow me to do more of that? That's what I see some of the best leaders do. And also what that enables them to do is you've grown an organization and you've seen the things that you're doing today are not the same things you were doing 10 years ago. You can't do the same things and lead an organization that's much larger and different. So the smart and best leaders are the ones that really evolve over time as their organization evolves.
Yes, I spent the morning working with some of my team on reimagining what we might look like in the future, given the tectonic changes taking place in the world. So it's always fun to look back 10 years, but yeah, there's no static state for sure.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
So let's kind of pick up on a theme that sometimes is not a very real popular, or some people may even perceive to be a negative in the conversation about leadership, and that's the role of failure. We're taught, certainly in school, don't get Fs or Ds, don't fail. But in life, and certainly in leadership, failure, I think, can be one of the best teachers. How have you seen, John, failure help inform leaders, especially those that are building healthy cultures?
Failure is absolutely an essential part of being a great leader. You've got to be willing to fail yourself. You've also got to be tolerant of other people failing. You've not only got to be tolerant of it, you've got to encourage other people to fail. Because if you're not, if they're not, or you're not taking risks or chances, you're not stepping outside your comfort zone. I think there's obviously a difference between failure, the repeated failure of the same mistake over and over again, which that's a whole different story. But when you have the right leader who understands the importance, anytime there's a failure, and sometimes it may feel worse than it really is, sometimes it's a blow to your ego. Sometimes it's a public thing. Sometimes it's a financial thing. It may feel worse at the moment, but over time, I've had some of the biggest failures lead to some of the best learning opportunities that helped me. I didn't even know it at the time, but it was like almost like taking this incredibly powerful college course that taught me a lesson that I was going to use at some point in the future. that was going to be absolute game changing for me. And had I not learned that lesson from that failure, I would have made that failure, that mistake at a much more costly, significant time. So I always look at it that way. When I'm working with leaders that might be even recovering from a big failure, or we're working together and they have some kind of setback, I always remind them of that. Okay, what's the takeaway? What's the lesson? And how you as the leader, this is a great teaching moment. This is a great example how you handle this failure in front of your team, in front of your organization, sets the tone for everything. It sets the tone for how willing other people are going to be to accept or do things that might lead to failure, and then how they deal with it. If you as the leader are closing your door and not facing anybody out of embarrassment, well, they're going to get the message that that's what people should do, be embarrassed. A real quick story, 3M has been famous for this. They really put a spotlight on their failures. Anytime a scientist is putting together, or chemist, any kind of trying to create something, they take all their failures and they put it into a kind of a vault, or so to speak, so that other scientists and other developers can pull from that at some point for some future use. And that was how Post-it notes came about. 50 billion Post-it notes are sold every single year. And it came from a gentleman, I think his name is Art Fry, who was trying to develop a super strong adhesive. Spencer, I think, was his name. And then Art Fry, and it failed because it didn't. It was like the Post-it notes. 5 years later, Art Fry was trying to sing in a choir and his bookmark was falling off his music book. And he said, you know what? I'm going to use that failed experiment and come up with a bookmark that just sticks on my paper. And then before you know it, everybody was using it to write notes. That's how Post-it notes started. So I think it really is fascinating. So there's all kinds of examples where failures have led to unbelievably things that actually change our life, and companies that actually change our world. That's been pretty fascinating.
Well, was it Edison failed 1,000 times or 10,000 times before he finally figured out the electric light bulb? So I'm fond of saying success is wonderful, but failure can be a very good teacher. And again, in the context of the failure you and I are talking about, it's not repetitively making a mistake that shouldn't be made over and over, but learning from something that didn't go as planned and using that as a catalyst to push yourself forward or come up with an entirely new idea and go in a new direction. John, in your keynote address, you talk about what the top 1% of leaders think, say, and do. And it might not be fair for you to encapsulate that in a podcast and support your keynote, but what are some of the things from your experience, both personally and working with a number of successful leaders, do you see that stands out a little differently with the top tier leaders?
Well, first thing to realize is the top best leaders are not multiples and multiples better than other leaders. They get multiples and multiples of better results than other leaders, but they are just marginally better in a lot of different areas, or even a few areas. That's number one. Secondly, is what I'll say is that the best leaders that I have seen, the truly transformational leaders, it's not just about your hands and your feet. It's about tapping into the head and the heart. They're exceptional at understanding people and building and connecting with people and their emotions and energizing them toward a common cause. That's a big deal. And there's a lot of little things that go into it. But I think what a lot of it comes down to is, and I talk about in another keynote, the 3% that makes the other 97% happen, not to overdo percentages. But what I find fascinating is leaders that are really effective and impactful, whether they consciously or unconsciously, they are very good at finding the 3% that makes the other 97% happen. I was working with a leader recently who was doing a very, very important, this is a leader, a political leader that's running for a very, very high office. And he was communicating his vision for turning around this organization, this country, actually. And it was a very good vision, but what was missing was the connection between the people and the vision, which ultimately is the 3% that makes the other 97% happen. So, and we kind of reworked it. If you can focus on why is this important to everybody else, and that communication gets to that individual around, okay, here's what doing all of this stuff will really mean to you. That one paragraph or three sentences is the 3% that makes the other rest of the speech not meaningless by any means, but it makes the other part of the speech have legs and really help do what this person is trying to do. But that's the most important part. And the best leaders are great at identifying that and finding that and taking action on that. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's...
Yeah, it does. Yeah, as I was listening to you share that, I'm curious from your perspective. And again, we've been talking about the intersection of leadership and culture. We really haven't talked much about, though, in your mind, in the work you've done, both in building your own businesses and then working with other companies. I mean, what are the elements that you look for, John, in a healthy culture?
A few things in reality. One is there a culture where everybody feels that they can speak their mind and be honest and be candid and forthcoming? An unhealthy culture is one where everybody's nodding their heads and they may be disagreeing in their mind or thinking, hey, I've got a better idea or a better way to do it. Or I don't think this is the way, this doesn't get us where they're, but they're afraid to say it. So a healthy culture is one where there's a lot of, and actually sometimes conflict, healthy conflict, because people are really open and because you've got different people with very diverse backgrounds and diverse ways of thinking. So I think I'd label that as openness. There's a lot of communication and that communication is very honest and open. The other aspect of the culture is there's a difference, and it's funny because I can almost spot this right away. There's two ends of the extreme. There's one where an organization, the people in an organization truly support each other and they have each other's backs. It doesn't mean that they agree on everything. They may disagree vehemently, but they still respect each other. They support each other. They want each other to be happy. They want each other to win. And then there's other environments where, and it's sometimes not everybody, it's a small fraction of the group that doesn't want that. They want their own success and they don't want what's best for everybody. It's about their numbers and their results and it's constantly around them. And when you have that type of organization, that's where that becomes infectious in a bad way. So the best organizations are one where truly people have, they speak positively about each other. It doesn't matter if somebody messed up, they got somebody's back and they're encouraging them to keep going versus others where they might be looking for that opportunity where somebody faltered and, hey, this is an opportunity for me to advance my position in the organization or stock price or whatever at the expense of somebody else. And that's disastrous.
Yeah. That definitely is unfortunately common when you put a group of people together that have competing interests or egos.
Yeah,
you can get that mindset. And I think it's a truism of a healthy culture, one that needs to be attended to on a regular basis. John, this particular podcast gets listened to by a number of different people, different types of backgrounds, but I think it's fair to say you have an affinity for leaders and probably an affinity for those that are early stage leaders or aspiring leaders to become a leader. And I would love to hear your advice to someone. What are the things that they should be focusing on as they either find themselves aspiring to be a leader and work their way into that capacity, or maybe they've been given the role of a new leader, but not fully equipped for the task?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things, advice-wise, you would have for that person?
That's a great question. And I always love getting that question because I think a few things are really important. And I put a post out there not long ago, and my own words, so I got to see if I can remember exactly what I put out there. But it was on a day where I was talking to somebody about this very thought. And I said, there's only so many. Now, I'm an avid reader. Let me preface this. I'm an avid reader of leadership books. I've read just about every single one out there. I just wrote one and it came out just recently. So obviously, there's a lot to get and learn from leadership books. But I wrote something to the effect of, there's only so much reading you can do about leading. At some point, you need to get out there and become the leader that others read about. Get out there and lead. And my point was, don't worry, to your prior question earlier, don't worry about making mistakes. Everybody, whether they realize it or not, you may sometimes think you're the only one when you're coming into a new role. Everybody has had self-doubt at some point in their career, in some point of their leadership career. I have, you have, everybody has. At some point, you wonder, am I like cut out to take us where we want to get to? I don't care if it's a day or if it lasts a year or it lasts longer. You're not alone, and realize that's always a common thought. But you're in your role for a reason. Someone saw something in you, and you have something other people don't have. So go with it. Take some chances. Don't worry about failing. Be authentic. Don't try and be somebody you're not. And lead with your heart. Lead people to where you want to go and want, feel if roles reverse, you would want them to take you. And if you begin every interaction just saying, hey, listen, my job is I want to leave this person better than I found them, you're ultimately going to build an organization of people that love to be around you. And you have a magnificent attraction power when you're that type of person. So that's the advice that I would give to somebody really at any level of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely applicable at all levels. Yeah, and I think that piece of advice, and you mentioned this earlier, of not trying to be someone other than who you are, it's impossible, I think, to be authentic if you're trying to mimic someone else's either leadership style, behavior, temperament. That's, I think, really important point is, which gets back to self-awareness. Understand who you are, what you're all about, and be authentically you and build your team around you to complement your strengths with their strengths.
Absolutely.
John, I appreciate you being a guest with us here on Winning Through Culture. We're going to put some contact information for you in the show notes, but I know your book recently came out that you referenced, Tomorrow's Leader, How the Best Leaders Become Better in a Fast-Changing World. That's on Amazon, and I know your website, and your website is johnlorito.com. Again, we'll put that in the show notes, but any parting thoughts as we wrap up here today, John, for either an entrepreneur, business owner, or established leader?
First of all, thanks for having me on, Tim. This has been an absolute pleasure. I think my message to any type of leader, and everybody that's listening to this is a leader, because whether you're a leader formally in an organization or a business, you're a leader of the hardest person in the world to lead, and that's yourself. So everybody has influence.
So true, Jeff.
The most important person, which is yourself. And just realize that everything gets better over time if you keep working toward where you're trying to get to. And just focus. It's not about night and day, overnight, magnificent, monstrous levels of success. It's just the concept of saying, can you get 1% better every single week? And if I can do that, I will be unstoppable. If I can get 1% better and I can teach other people how to get 1% better every single week, you won't even recognize the person and how far that person has come over the next year, let alone 3 years or 5 years. So it's all about taking those small steps. It's all about progress, not perfection. So that would be my advice.
Well, that is very sound advice, John. I appreciate you being with us today and appreciate you being a person that is committed to helping other people become a better version of themselves and sharing your experiences. So thank you very much for being our guest today on Winning Through Culture. Again, John Lorito, author, podcaster, speaker, and coaching consultant. We'll have his contact information in our show notes. And until we are together again, be well.